This is James Robertson, Syncom Smalltalk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Smalltalk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this really is the deal. The way you Here's Gayle Keegan at ESOG 2008 discussing how they used Smalltalk and Seaside to find the Bachhaus and Curtin.
So it's pretty long. And the human being are traced back to the Ice Age. And you find all kinds of that stuff. It was the capital of one of the independent microstates in Germany, and the written traces go back 890 years, and has about 30,000 inhabitants. So this is the ESOG, which took place 2 years ago, 4 years ago. Maybe you could not remember the picture that has been taken in front of the university building. Before ESOG, that year there was the Bach Festival. Actually, the Bach Festival happened next week again, and that's where we'll speak about did the same presentation. And that's due to the fact that about 300 years ago, someone with the name Johann Sebastian Bach, Bach, easy for Dutch people, difficult for French and English people, lived and worked in the city. So he wrote there things like the well-tempered piano, well-tempered clavier. And this is his handwriting for it, or the Klavierbüchlein for Anna Magdalena Bachin. And you see the date it was written in Curtin. Most of you who played the piano during being a pupil and played pieces of that. Yes, that's me. So I asked the same question in Reno at the Smarter Solutions, and nobody, no hands. So that's the difference between the U.S. and... Okay, this is the piece with the original handwriting. For the 7 years, as you know, Bach moved from Curtin to Leipzig, and there has been a lot of research about his time in Leipzig. He was there for many, many, many more years, so 27 years he lived in Leipzig, and Curtin was just before. And about the Curtin time, there's a lot more uncertainty than about the Bach time, so the research was different. And the open question for about 120 years is, where did he live? What's now Prince Leopold of Anhalt Curtin, that's him, he was an important prince. Other princes were far less important. There were princes in history that were just doing party every day and burned all the money they had. So, but unlike those princes that have no influence, there was 100 years before Prince Ludwig, who founded the first German society for the German language, Fruchtbringende Gesellschaft. And so Leopold did two important things. First of all, he hired Bach. And separately, he enlarged the city by two areas, the west and the east. And that was the only expansion of the city between the mid-ages and the industrialization in the 19th century. So what people want to try now is use Bach as a tourist attraction. And so the Kölner Bachgesellschaft, that is the city-owned society, headed by Georg Schäfer, decided to do to improve the touristic thing, and they decided to do a feasibility study sponsored by public money and tailored with the question, find out everything about Bach in Curtin, specifically, where did he live? So the other question were just there, just in case we don't find where he lived. So this is the type of feasibility study. And then they did a bidding, as you know, it was a bidding by everybody. They knew up front who should win. And so they wrote everything in there. in the beginning about finding them. These are our buildings, so this is not an up-to-date picture of our curtain office, and that's the Dortmund office. And the software we have been doing here, so the idea of these people were, if they were researching without computers for 120 years and didn't find out, we need to do other means, and in the sense was using computers to find out where the Bauhaus was. That was the original idea, that's why they brought us into the picture. The project was started on the 23rd of March 2006 and took a little bit less than 2 years. It had to be expanded several times, but it's over now. And we did it in 4 phases and started as an agile project. So like a software project. We knew where we wanted to go, but we did not know how to approach it. So we did 4 phases anyway, but it turned out that the phases were interleaving all the time. And very early we decided we will allow every logical way of decision taking. And that's something very key, because until then there was only one methodology being used: find a piece of paper and prove it from there. So only a positive proof was the methodology being used. And we said we also want to allow negative proofs. So he could not have lived in any building but these, or this, something like that. And if you do it the other way around, you know this from mathematics, proof things, you have to exclude all the alternatives, so you need to have a very broad approach. And so in this case, we need to have information about all homes in the city of Goethe. So the first phase was a drill down phase to do what are the important questions, what are the approaches, etc., etc. So as it was a big team of up to 30 people, they had to be all streamlined and do all this. In phase two, we started, we wanted to do a collection. Collection means we wanted to get all the documents, all the literature into the computer. And so we went to libraries, antique bookshops, EB and archives, and scanned the material, OCR'd it, made it to Word documents, and typed handwritten documents manually, so you have to read the old documents. This is the total number of documents we had, were 700 documents with 14,000 pages. And as this is a relatively big amount, there was a filter, so not only some percentages of the material really got scanned and entered into the system. If we were browsing through the material and said it's pointless to have that, we left it aside. Now the problem was how to use the computer. And the basic idea was to do a semantic network. That was the idea. And as some of you might know, there are 2 semantic network systems on the market, both written in Smalltalk. The first one is K-Infinity. K-Infinity was presented at ESAC in Essen, long ago, 7 years ago. And it's sold by a Darmstadt company. It's going back to research at GMB and GID when they were still in existence. Now it's Fraunhofer Institute at Darmstadt. And it's used by the police for doing their research stuff. The second one is Atlas TI. Atlas TI comes from Berlin, originally created at the Department of Psychology. And it's more oriented to data mining and data analysis of non-numeric way. So it is the SPSS for non-numbers. The problem with that was it's not extensible. So we had to mix both. So we had data about the houses, you will see soon, and we had unstructured data in form of text. And Atlas TI is not extensible. It would be, but the company only sells, it's a BSE thing. They only sell the ready-made software. And then we tried Google Desktop, and that was not practical at all. So at the end we said, okay, yes.
One more clarification. What if there's too many manual steps for K-Infinity?
You have to take copy and paste all the document contents into it. No interface to work.
You couldn't split that?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was more work than doing it our own. So the semantic network thing was not the biggest thing. And we wanted to try CSAC. That was prior to the Seabreeze initiative. So Seabreeze only started, which you saw yesterday, after this was done. So what I will show here is native CSAC. So we built GH botnets. That has been developed according to the requirements of the project during the project time. And it was done in a way that the researcher on Bach and the programmer worked closely together. So every requirement, like Capital, which we heard yesterday, every idea the researcher had was implemented immediately. And the UI is a web browser because it was a distributed team. And it represents textual information and numeric information in the same system. And the text data, which I will show later, it's shown in graphically using Adrian Vondrian and SVG, and in tables at the same time. And so the problem was to find information hidden in mountains of letters in some documents. So we use a classical approach using VisualWorks and Gemstone architecture. And so we use VisualWorks for the sophisticated part, for the semantic network, and for the CSAC user interface, and Gemstone to handle the persistencies. And for the algorithm, you may have noticed that earlier this year, Torsten won the Java competition. Where's Torsten? Okay. And we used his algorithm to research the texts and put it into Gemstone and run the Gemstone line. The interesting part is in a semantic network, you have the idea of a notion. And notions are sort of classes, and we tried to put them in the right place in the class hierarchy. And it turned out that it is a sibling of class-class. And so it's not a place, a subclass of class description. It's not a place where you would normally program. Like you were trained yesterday by meta programming. So we used a similar approach than they did. And we entered notions as a sibling of class and relation and value as subclasses. And so the way to do it, because notions have instances and these instances have another instance. So you have a three-level thing. That's why it turns out to be a meta thing. And in VisualWorks, which we used as well as Squeak, it's permitted to extend the meta level of the system. Gemstone doesn't allow that. And other smaller stuff don't allow that. But the classic Visual Studio would have allowed it. And so we were pretty well done with using it in Gemstone, in VisualWorks. So when moving the stuff to Gemstone, we just could represent the constructor for the networks in Gemstone, but not the network itself. So when the network is just built, then the objects are copied from Gemstone. Special object is the temporal object, because we are doing history, and in history, you always have to care about time, and you have a temporal moment or a temporal interval. Sometimes you have very sharp information about time. Sometimes you have very vague information of time. And what you want to do, you want to argue about time, because that's very important in looking at historical documents. When did it happen? If you have an information about what Bach did in 1694, then that's pointless, because that was 13 years before he came to Köln. So, Holmes' inheritance of Curtin, which was one of the prime sources of our information, is going to the text register. And believe it or not, for hundreds of years, the text registers are still there. And so what we did, we used an Excel spreadsheet and copied them, typed them. Why did we use this? This is a list of all people who paid home taxes. And it doesn't speak where the buildings are, but it speaks about the owner and the amount of money to be paid. We use that information in combination with the detail with sketches of buildings of 1806, that's 100 years later. So we had to follow up who owned this building year by year, because the taxes were always the same. At least some sorts of taxes were the same. The Schoss, what they called it. Other taxes changed, but this tax was always the same throughout the 100 years. So we could find a line in time to 1806 and further on to 1819. But between 1818 and 1819, the entire list was changed in the sequence. So we had to do relatively clever pattern matching. And then we used detailed plans of 1855 and 2003. And then we had a homage list when the prince was inaugurated. And that's a very important list, because it doesn't only give the homeowners, it only also gives them the people who rented the homes. But that's twirling. That is 15 months before, 17 months before Bach came to Köln. It's bad. So we don't have any kind of, there was no homage during the time when Bach was there. So there's no real lists. Otherwise, it would be an old problem, an old solution. So we transferred all that information to the same network, and there we could see, according to today's addresses, where everybody lived. These are the text kinds. Like, don't go over it. But one, number 8 is very important. That's the right to brew beer. There was a special tax to this. And at some years, you can see that 60% of the homes had the right to brew beer. Today, we still have a brand called Kirchner Beer, but that's brewed somewhere south of Frankfurt. So. And there's one thing called Schutzgeld. Schutzgeld is still used for other, in a different thing, different meaning to that. It is a,
You know, it used to be the case that beer was forbidden in summer because beer was bad?
In some areas, yes.
Wow.
But mostly, they had to brew fresh beer, and when it was fresh, it was okay. They couldn't have cool beer. And that's why they use different ways of making beer, what they call Oberbier. And so we started off with these text files and copied them into Excel tables. And they were imported using ComConnect, which we actually, what you find in Visual 7.6 has been written upon the requirement of this project. So the nice browsers and things, and because I said, I don't want to grab a wank business, I want to have a nice user interface. And he did it for me. And then out of that information, Carsten, who did the presentation yesterday, mainly did the work of building up the semantic network, and they're using Seaside, Mondrian, and SVG as representation. And this was the UI for the research. So that was our starting point. This is a picture of one of those books, and there are binders like this, and you have to go through 100 of them. And each is this thick. And this is just one page, and I think you can't do it. That is the Excel table, which shows the condensed information. This is basically a pretty early one, because it shows 1716, and there are not much more. But doesn't matter which one you think, they all look the same. And this is the final thing. So this is now the house, Wall Street 17. Those of you who know Kirby, it's pretty close to the position where we had the reception on the roof, just across the street from there. And you can see that the house is in the middle, and the text, it has a few text payments on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side you see the list, and you see that the text payment starts in 1741, and you see, immediately, he can't have lived there. The house is too new. Okay? So that was just an example. I took that example because one of the women working at Bachgesellschaft, that's her, that's the house where she was born. Okay, so the central question is, or was, where did Johann Sebastian Bach live? We don't care about Frau, we care about Johann Sebastian Bach. We could also have other questions now, but that's what we care about. So one came up with the idea, said, okay, we had a postal system then. It did work, and it was fully functional. That's a drawing of those. The drawing is done around 1900. But it shows how it was, and even the fees are known. So from Köthen to Erfurt, the price was 2 Groschen, which is about $10 to send a letter from Köthen. That's all known. So why not look at one of those letters and find out whether Bach fully functional. So, this is actually a letter Bach wrote to Erfurt, that's the letter. Here is the price, 2 Groschen up there. And do we find an address here? Yes! Deren Hochwohlfesten Hochgeboren. So, it's all about titles, professions, and town. And the center is down here. And there's what Bach. Johann Sebastian Bach. And it just gives his title, Fürstlicher Hofmusik. That's all. So, does it help? No. So, Köthen basically had 3 kinds of homes. Some homes belonged to the city, and other homes belonged to the duke, to the prince. And for the one homes, for those in the city, there are the taxes from the city. For the others, there are the rental agreements with the prince. And both are there. So, and we know that if Bach's name would occur in it, you can be absolutely sure someone else would have found the document. So, that's something we guessed up front. So, Bach's name is in no text list. It is also not in in the list of people who had to pay personal taxes, Schutzgeld, because everyone who worked for the prince was exempt. So he was tax exempt anywhere, and he did not rent a house from the king. Now, this is the oldest view of Köthen of 1650 from Merian. And can you do something with this? Find the house where he lived? No. This is the oldest map of Köthen. And actually, interestingly enough, this map is north. Normal maps are not north of those days. So you have maps in all directions. And the interesting thing with this map is this is the center city of the map. And this is now Google Earth showing the city. And if you today, if you map them one on the other, you see that the structure of the today's city and the structure of the city of the 18th century are exactly the same. So no big change at all in the time. So what you find today in houses is those one of the 18th century. It's better to use this map because it's clearer, it's a little bit newer, and the rest of the presentation I will show you this map. It's of 1778, and as I told you, there was only one expansion, and so this was accurate also for Boston. This is the center of the city. And actually, when you go to the city today, you see 2 city walls. The old city wall, which is this one, and a new city wall, which is basically around the entire city. So this is where the new wall is. That's the old wall. And the most are still partly there, so you can still see them today. So, and you can see from that point that when Bach came there, we have to find a way, when did they build the new wall? And part of the project was finding, let me know, except me know the date. It was at the 24th February 1719 when they started to build the new wall. So, few facts are known about Johann Sebastian Bach's home. So it's known that he had to have a spacious home. It's even documented in a Hamburg newspaper that he used four wagons to transport all of his material from Köthen to Leipzig. So, and to put fill four wagons, you must have had a big home. So external students lived with him, and the Hofkapelle, that was his orchestra, did their exercises in Bach's home. That's fact. So in history, if you browse all the documents, you can see that there are a set of candidates which have been mentioned to be potential homes of Johann Sebastian Bach. So the other buildings which we looked at have no sign at all that they are potential being used by Bach. So we did not find any new records on top of those buildings that were might be candidates. So we looked at the potential Bach homes, and this is the first one we looked at. It's basically an empty space now, and that was something interesting. It was built in to let, so he couldn't have lived there because it was built to let. Not that this particular building was built to let, but that was one of the extensions of the city made by the prince. That's right. And it's also known who was the first renter of that home. But it was just built in June 1721, which is just almost when Bach left. That is the next one. That's over there. And that's just too small. It's a very small piece. And then there was a name that, so this is a list of 1855, when you see the name Bach and the word Erhard. And so we looked, what's going on with this? Why is this there? And there's a lot of argumentation in the history about it, and find out about it. And we found out that this home is this one, also too small. So it couldn't be Holzmark 12. But there must be something going on with Erhard and Bach, because otherwise they wouldn't have made this remark. So is there an explanation for that remark? We found it out. So it could be Holzmark 12. And the other Erhard home is Marktstrasse, that's close to where the Rathaus, the town hall is. So it's very, very small piece. And also there were shops in there, so, as they are today. And so it couldn't be that home. Moyer Heider wants to argue about Stiftstrasse 11, because there is a plate there showing potential Bach home on this sign. That's by the Catholic Church, for those who were in close to the castle. And actually, this building is off. We don't talk about this building as building, because that was built in late 19th century, but about the location. And there's a lot of arguing, and tracing, because someone reported something about the Witwe Schulze, widow, that he would live there. But interestingly enough, 60 years later, someone found a document where she lived at this building and was so enthusiastic about it, but we could trace that they only had the same information, and it's basically worthless. So there's a lot of argumentation in here. Who argues how? The way we did this is called biometric analysis. So bibliometric analysis, maybe I had a beer too much last night. Thank you, by the way, it was good. Bibliometric analysis tries to find out who quotes who. And by that, we could follow up, how did the older researchers argue in been working on the history. And this was pretty tough work to do the bibliometric analysis on that building, but it turned out that the argument was weak, they were presented. So because we got to Hartung's source, Hartung is someone who brought this up in the book 1900, and he just called it a guess, and there's no reason to be surprised when I find the document back again. So this building is also gone. It's remaining the three homes of Johann Andreas Lausch. So that was a rich man. He had three homes. And it is renowned. This is the first one. That's a new building, Buttermark 3. That's where he had his shop. So he was selling cloth. And that is too small also, as Holzmark, Markstrasse 11. So it's just too small, so it couldn't be this one. Now we come to this interesting building. As you can see immediately, it has been built in for the 20th anniversary of the GDR in 69. That is a plate there that shows this as Kontaktkaufhaus. And it's actually, we found it. That's one of the homes of Johann Sebastian. Actually, it has a number and had a few owners, went through, and it's one of the largest homes of Köthen. Had to pay $2.99 home tax, that's $265. About, you can say the taler is 70 euros, those of you who do euros, rather than dollars. And only six homes of the 451 homes had a higher tax. So it's a very, very big home in the center of the city. And this is how it looked about 100 years, a little bit more than 120 years ago. And this is how it looks now. And the arguments for this are that the predecessor, that Johann Andreas Lausch, got directly paid by the prince for having Stricker, who was the predecessor of Bach, as the director of the Hofkapelle, exercised in this home. And the same amount of money was given to Bach that they could practice in his home. So that's one of the arguments. Another argument is that Bach didn't like the home because there is a close by watermill, and the watermill has clock day and night. And so you can only compose music with one speed. So the rattling mill is well documented. And so then these are the arguments. There's one more. Wall Street 25-26. So in these are the literature about it. So there was arguments pro and con about this home in the mid of the 20th century. So someone said yes, and other people said no, and they interpreted figures, etc., etc. And actually, Walsballstraße was a tiny way around the city between Magdeburger and Hallischem suburbs. So, and there were gardens there, and there was a manufacturing for silver and gold fiber to have beautiful costumes, and called Fabrik. And there were gardens of wealthy citizens along this. And on the 27th February 1719, Prince Leopold took the decision to build a new extension to the city. And when you look at the map, these are the only streets which are straight. That's Barak. So you have straight roads. The older roads are all winding. And there's more in there, and importantly, there's a property tax rule that says the homeowners will only pay tax when all homes are built. And you know what this result was? They kept a few places empty as long as they could. So this is a drawing we found, which gives the original owners of the gardens and how they were built. And here you find Lauch. Then you also find Stange. I will speak, give one word about Stange later. Okay, so taxation only started in 1730 because then they changed the law. So it will only be 3 years tax exempt and not as long as possible. And believe it or not, immediately the rest of the land parcels were built. This is another drawing. So the Mantic network answers when the home was built anyway. You can do this with this home, which is now the home where the mayor of the city lives. And as all of the others, the taxation starts in 1730, but we can find out the guy sold his other home in 19 to move here. That's something we can find here. So he moved 1719 in Flora Tribo, where he lived in a different home, Kleiner Plan 2, that's more close to the castle, small home. And then he moved here, and he was 11 years on 10 years tax exempt. And someone else moved into Kleiner Plan 2. Okay, Wallstraße 2526. It's documented, it's built in 12. 12 is just wrong, but look at the numbers. Twos and nines are very similar, and they just misinterpreted one of those figures. So correct is the home was built in 1719 by Johann Andreas Lauch, and the first renter was Johann Sebastian Bach. This is the list of owners, and interestingly enough, you find the word Erhard again here. So another argument that the collaboration of Erhard and Bach living in the same home at different times, actually, is correct. So, what we have found are many positive hints that Johann Sebastian Bach lived first in Schalaunische Straße 44, then moved to Wallstraße 2526, and we have no not futile negative statements found. So, the result is, initially he lived in this building, and then he moved to that one below. And interestingly enough, the monument is already at the right place. The monument has been built in 1885, so for its 200th birthday. And if you look at this picture, you see the Bauhaus again. You saw the picture already before when I was speaking about our. This is our office. And that's the Bauhaus. So it's only 2 hours in. So, that's it.
Enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008 held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, the Smalltalkers group at Ning. You can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.